It's TechBiter Worldwide with Bill Blinn. The latest on programs and policies, helpful hints, and a bit of occasional nonsense. All in more or less plain English.
Podcast number 888 for the 28th of June, 2024. This week, panicking pundits pummel Photoshop prematurely. Sorry about the alliteration. If you listen to or read some of what passes for thoughtful reporting, you might be convinced that Adobe is a demon that must be eliminated. I disagree. In short circuits, Windows 7 introduced a handy new way to share files with other local users, but Home Group wasn't widely used and it was discontinued with Windows 10. A follow-up function is limited by working only with Wi-Fi and Bluetooth connections, not Ethernet. Something better is needed. And Mozilla's Pocket is a handy way to make references for articles you want to read available on any mobile device or computer that has a browser. Is Adobe really out to destroy photographers? If you believe some of the drivel found on YouTube, that would certainly seem to be the case. Let's take a look at some of the nonsense. Great outcries about Adobe began around the 1st of June. Adobe demands access to all your images, people shouted. Even people who should know better paraded their ignorance with headlines like these. Adobe's war on photographers. Adobe must be stopped. Adobe spies on you. And the Adobe tire fire continues. Yeah, right. The cause of all this gnashing of teeth, sound, and fury was nothing more than a tempest in a molehill, or maybe a case of making a mountain out of a teapot. Something like that. The molehill was a simple change to Adobe's terms of service. Here is the relevant section, and I quote, Adobe may analyze your Creative Cloud or Document Cloud content to provide product features and improve and develop our products and services. Creative Cloud and Document Cloud content include, but are not limited to, image, audio, video, text, or document files and associated data. Adobe performs content analysis only on content processed or stored on Adobe's servers. We don't analyze content processed or stored locally on your device. End of quote. That last sentence is pretty explicit, isn't it? And here it is again. Adobe performs content analysis only on content processed on or stored on Adobe's servers. We don't analyze content processed or stored locally on your device. Seems pretty definitive, doesn't it? So those who don't want Adobe to see their work should simply store everything on their own computer. Problem solved. Or for those who want to use Adobe's online systems to share their efforts with coworkers, could opt out. It's really just that easy. And here's how, if you want to. Navigate to your account's data and privacy settings where you can choose not to share information about how you use Adobe's applications. Adobe uses this information to learn how they can improve their products. I leave it turned on. On the same panel, users can also opt out of allowing Adobe to analyze their work. This is what created the ridiculous firestorm in June, even though Adobe had prepared and posted a content analysis FAQ in mid-February, 3.5 months before the rebels without a cause started yammering. You'll find a link to that content analysis FAQ on the TechBiter Worldwide website. The page provides an overview, explains what Adobe does with your content if you allow it, explains how to opt out, and explains that opting out isn't available in certain specific instances. Those instances include these. You submit an image to Adobe for analysis or when you provide feedback on the operation of a function. You submit images to Adobe Stock. If you use beta or pre-release versions of applications, or when you use a feature that requires online analysis. Some of the panicking pundits also say it's necessary to change a setting in Photoshop if you want to opt out. I doubt that because the Creative Cloud account settings should override what's set in any individual application. But if you want to be absolutely positively sure, open the Photoshop Improvement Program tab in Preferences and make sure both of these checkboxes are unchecked. First, yes, I'd like to participate. And second, I give Adobe permission to use my images and associated data to train Adobe's generative AI models. If you want to know, I leave both of those checked also. Maybe Adobe should have had these options unchecked by default, but the objective clearly is to get as much input as possible from users. All of this is not to say that Adobe is perfect, by the way. It isn't, and one error introduced more than a month ago in Photoshop is still present, even though the function works properly in the Photoshop beta version. It's annoying, but there's an easy workaround. What is more annoying, though, is what may be intentionally misleading exposés by those who pose as Photoshop experts and yet leap to faulty conclusions after failing to read even simple explanations of what is being done, why, and how to opt out if you want to. So, no, Adobe is not trying to kill photography or eliminate photographers. I think of it in terms of what photographers receive from Adobe. Because Adobe has already analyzed millions of images in its collection of stock images, Photoshop AI, which is known as Firefly, already knows how to create amazingly realistic components of images. I've mentioned previously that I create a daily special event image. These images are horizontal, 1200 by 628 pixels, but sometimes the stock image I'd like to use doesn't fit that format, and it cannot be cropped to fit that format. Further, I absolutely refuse to stretch or warp images to make them fit. I hate that. So either I'd have to use another image or place an ugly panel in the area that would otherwise be blank. Adobe's Generative Fill fixes that, as I showed in the June 7th edition of TechBiter Worldwide. And you'll find a link to that article on this week's TechBiter Worldwide. In that episode, I found some shortcomings, but Firefly continues to improve and does exceptional background work. Monday, the 26th of August, is Pony Express Day. I found a map that shows the route from St. Louis to Sacramento. The image didn't fit the format, though. I could have extended the background using a color from the image, but a background of Western Hills seemed like a better choice. I asked Photoshop to create an image using this description of what I wanted: old Western U.S. landscape with hills and blue sky. Then I added a light Gaussian blur, and I had the image I wanted. You'll see it on the TechBiter Worldwide website. The beta version of Photoshop can use a third iteration of Firefly to create a complete background. I had a photo of a cheeseburger that was slightly crooked, and it didn't fit my format, so I had to start by rotating it slightly. Then I had Photoshop remove the existing background, which was primarily black. With only the cheeseburger in the foreground and even the table removed, I told Photoshop to create a busy restaurant background. And it even gave me some fries with that. Check it out on the TechBiter Worldwide website. So if giving Adobe access to some of my images helps in any way to improve Firefly's capabilities, I'm all for it. Sharing can be a good thing. If you find these podcasts useful, and I hope you do, might you consider a donation? There are no ads here, and support from listeners is the sole source of income. It's easy. Just visit the website and click the donate button near the top of any page. You can make a one-time donation or schedule a repeating donation every month. I thank you. And so does the cat. In short circuits, Microsoft eliminated home group sharing starting with Windows 10. There are other options, but home group was so easy to use that it's missed even now. Microsoft says it dropped home group because the feature wasn't widely used and it did create some confusion for users. Introduced in Windows 7, home group was promoted as an easy way to share files and printers between devices on a home network. It became less necessary with the advent of cloud storage, and Microsoft now recommends using OneDrive or network file sharing to achieve similar functionality. The problem with that is that some people despise OneDrive, and network file sharing can be difficult for normal users to set up. Microsoft now has a feature called Nearby Sharing, but it requires the use of Wi-Fi or Bluetooth. My primary computer has both of those, but Bluetooth has a limited operating range, and I prefer to use a wired connection on the main computer. Nearby sharing doesn't work on wired connections. I'd like somebody at Microsoft to explain why. But if you need to share files with others in or out of the household, you still have a lot of options. The easiest and most secure option is SneakerNet, even though you might not be wearing sneakers. Copying a file to a thumb drive and taking that thumb drive to another computer is foolproof, but it is slow, it is cumbersome, and it's easy to mess up. If the person you deliver the file to changes the file at the same time you're changing the file, either your changes or the other user's changes will be lost when the file comes back to your computer. Using USB drives to deliver copies of files should be limited to read-only situations, or you have to remember not to modify the file until the user returns it to you. There must be better options, and there are. If all of the computers that need to share files are within range, activate Nearby Sharing. On Windows 11, it's under Settings, System, Nearby Sharing. If you're still using Windows 10, you'll find it in Settings, System, Shared Experiences. After you've set it up, select a file you want to share using the Windows Explorer, right-click the file, and select Share. In Windows 11, Share is an icon at the top of the context menu. Then you can specify who, meaning which computer, you're sharing the files with. The user of that computer will receive a notification. But still, there must be better options. And of course there are. One of the easiest ways to share files involves using Google Drive. After copying files to Drive, use the browser interface to select a file or an entire directory that you want to share. Right-click the file or directory and choose File from the context menu. You can then give access to anyone who has the link or restrict it to only those you have explicitly added. Then choose Add and fill in Google account names or email addresses. Assign permissions as one who can view the file but not change it, add comments, or fully edit the files. Then use the Send button to transmit an email to the people that you've added. If you're not a OneDrive hater, you can use it as you would Google Drive or Dropbox. These options expand your sharing options a lot. Those you're sharing files with need not be on your local network. Anyone who has internet access to Google Drive, OneDrive, or Dropbox can be permitted to work on the files that you want to share. Because so many easy options exist for file sharing, and setting up network shares can befuddle all but the most network-aware users, I'm not even going to go there. This section has a headline that says Mozilla Pocket isn't new or improved, but it continues to be useful. That headline might be a bit misleading. Mozilla does improve Pocket occasionally, but that's not the main point here. Pocket is a useful add-on for browsers, both Firefox and those that are Chrome-based, and it's also available for users of Android and iOS mobile devices. At its most basic, Pocket is a free service from Mozilla that makes it easy to share links for articles or websites you'd like to read and discover content that can be personalized to your interests. Users can also save links to videos that they've discovered when they didn't have time to watch them. If Firefox is your primary browser, Pocket is already included, and you'll find a Save to Pocket icon on the address bar. For other browsers, you will need to install it from the browser manufacturer's store or from Google Play for Chrome-based browsers such as Vivaldi, Brave, Opera, and Microsoft Edge. For mobile devices, download the app from the appropriate store. You'll need to create a free Pocket account with Mozilla or use your existing Mozilla account if you already have one. The account ensures that articles and links you save on one device will be available on all of your other devices. In addition to the free service, Mozilla does offer a paid upgrade that includes a few extra features. More about that in just a bit. There are differences between Pocket in a browser and the apps that are made for Android and Apple mobile devices. On browsers, the home screen shows collections of articles and videos that Mozilla thinks will interest you. There are also tabs called Saves, Discover, and Collections. Saves are the items that you've found and explicitly saved. Open the Discover tab, and you can specify topics that interest you. Pocket will then display web pages and videos in those categories. The Collections tab is where you'll find groups of articles collected by Pocket. You can also create your own collections, but these are shown on the Saves page. That's also where you create one by clicking Create Collection, and then giving the collection a name and optionally a description. After creating a collection, you can add items to it. There are also options for specifying favorites and searching for saved items. The Pocket mobile apps offer the same features, but in different formats. There are also more settings that cover everything from how saved items are opened and whether text is justified to information about offline downloading and whether you want light mode, dark mode, or the system default. The free version of Pocket makes it possible to save, read, watch, or listen to media from any device where you've installed the Pocket browser or the mobile app. Pocket Premium for $5 a month or $45 annually creates a permanent library of everything you've saved, including suggested tags. It allows for full text search, adds premium fonts, and a few extra capabilities. The search function would be useful if you save a lot of content to Pocket, and the premium version will suggest tags when you save a story. Tags make organization easier. The ability to modify typefaces and other features may or may not be worth $45 a year, or $60 if you pay monthly. So if you have to send emails or text messages to yourself when you find something you'd like to read or watch later on a different device, Pocket could be a most welcome addition to your browser and mobile devices. Install the apps from the device's App Store or the Pocket Browser extension from the Browser's Store or the Play Store. And if you use Firefox, as I said earlier, it's already there. Thanks for listening to TechBiter Worldwide. I'm Bill Blinn. There's more on the website, techbiter.com, and if you have a question or a comment, use the contact link you'll find there. Stop by again next week for another session.